Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Kanaka Taco Podcast. We are here with Chris and Luigi once again. Hello.
Hello. We're back.
We're back.
Yes.
Do you want to admit that we're recording this for the second time, or should I just include that?
You already mentioned it, but I was gonna touch on it. I wanted to bring it up because this is our. I feel like we normally wouldn't do this, but I didn't even hear it. I kind of want to hear that episode that we recorded.
so just a little background on what it is that we're talking about. We recorded this episode originally about a week and a half ago due to a couple different circumstances, one of which was I had drinks. But so there were a couple different factors. It didn't turn out that well.
So did I.
It didn't turn out that well. It was a complete mess. It was like sending in a rough draft as a rough draft of an essay to your prof. It was equivalent to that.
And your prof coming back at you saying, this is shit.
Yeah, this is shit. So we're doing this as a redo. Before we get into today's topic, just let you guys know, one of the things I want to do is just put in all the plugs at the beginning, just so that we don't forget about them. So just make sure to follow us on social media, Instagram, Twitter. That's going to be where we'll post our updates as well as anything else that might be anime related in any sort of way. Luigi, you're pretty active on Twitter.
Not lately.
Get on the Instagram train.
No, I haven't been active lately, so that's my bad.
Well, but I'll admit it.
No. But I'll I'm admitting it on here so that I can hold myself accountable.
All right.
You know,
there we
that,
go.
That I'm admitting to my responsibility, and I will be more active on Twitter. Meaning, I'll stop paying attention at my work meetings, and I'll just tweet something every now and then.
There we go.
Work from home, guys. Woo!
So today's topic, and actually, it's great that we're going to be releasing this episode just 1 week before it actually happens. But this episode is all about Ilimakun. We're doing this. Yeah.
Sorry. Did you want to talk about news prior to getting into the topic?
I don't have any news besides talking about Ilimakun season 2, because there's a recent teaser video. I don't know if you saw the teaser video.
I did not.
But there's a teaser video which shows us exactly, or actually, you know, one of the arcs that is that will be featured in season 2. I'm going to talk about this later, but it is the student council arc. And this is one of my favorite arcs. Any arc that involves Amelie is going to be one of my favorite arcs. So
that's a given.
That's just me. It's also just a really, really good arc. We kind of get the ball rolling. The ship, you know, ship hasn't sailed at this point, but they're building.
They're prepping it up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like in the same way that God tells Noah to make the ark. Yeah, we're kind of in those stages where the arcs, where the ship's being built.
Okay. Well, I don't have many news. I don't even remember which news we might have talked about in our previous attempt at recording this.
Mm-hmm.
But
recent news regarding Attack on Titan, where you were wrong.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. Oh, that is recent news, actually. So yeah, I guess two things I want to talk about. I guess yeah. Attack on Titan season 2. I finished it. It was great. Talk to me about it on Twitter if you want to talk about it. And I guess, final season part 2 got announced, which is going to be a whole 9 months of a break, which in my opinion, that should have just been season 5 at this
and
point.
It's going to be difficult because the manga is going to be released. Soon,
yeah. So
which means that if you're strictly an anime viewer,
like me,
you're gonna have a hard time.
And me being on Twitter, I'm going to make sure that I block anything that says Attack on Titan. Because I am following the topic Attack on Titan, but I think that's a very broad topic, so I'm going to unfollow that, and I need to be I need to be careful because I did get some stuff spoiled from this season just by looking at memes on Twitter of an episode that hadn't even been released yet. It was a manga meme. And I hated it because I get it. Manga readers are the elite force of the weebs, but don't make memes. Don't make the public. But yeah, I guess I was wrong. I still stand by what I said before. I would have preferred a movie, honestly. But the fact that we're getting something much longer than a movie, I can't complain. So we're getting another season. Well, part two, I guess. I still think part twos are stupid, but whatever. But speaking of parts...
Like, I don't understand the whole, like, season something part two.
Me neither.
Like, why can't you just call it another season?
I know. Especially, well, sometimes I understand it when the break in between the two, like, parts of the season is, like, just one release season, or if you know what, like, just 3 months break. Mm-hmm. But if you're releasing it 9 months later, that's basically saying that the part two of the final season is going to start at the same time that part one started.
Yeah.
It's going to start 1 whole year after part one started. So just call that season five the final season. I don't know.
Like, they made a mistake calling it like the final season.
I think
so. And
then
part of the way through, they thought, oh shit, we can't get this done. But we already called it the final season, so...
Maybe?
Final season part two.
Yeah. I don't know. But hey, do you want to know what anime has parts that I'm actually not mad about these parts?
FreeZero?
No. JoJo.
JoJo.
Because JoJo part six got announced, baby. We're getting an anime. Woo! That means I don't have to read the manga.
I'll just read the manga.
You know how I kept saying, I'm going to start reading manga. And like one of the ones that I always say is JoJo Part 6. Well, it got announced. Not anymore. I can just wait for the manga. And then after that, I'll start saying that I need to read Part 7 and 8. But, you know, whatever. So, yeah, that's the other big news. JoJo Part 6. It's basically everything I saw on Reddit that day. The day that it got announced, it was just all over Reddit. It was great. You love to see it. So yeah, I just wanted to talk about that because JoJo.
Yeah, I've got a couple other news. So Crunchyroll recently released a couple short teaser episodes in preparation for Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid season 2. So these are really, really short episodes. They're like 1 minute. They're like 1 to 2 minute episodes where it's just like a single scene just to kind of get like whet your appetite. They're doing a really, really good job with it because I saw the first teaser episode and I was already hooked. Exactly the same vibes as season one. Kyoto Animation. Oh man, I don't know how they do it, but like for just a single like 1 minute video to hook me. Oh boy.
I hadn't seen those. Thank you for mentioning them because I'm gonna watch it after.
The first episode just came out like today, I think. So
I feel like I can watch it while you talk.
I mean, you could watch it while we talk. I'm a little apprehensive about what's happening the second season because they're introducing a new character, and as someone that's read the manga, I'm not a fan of her.
Okay,
she's a short dragon with giant boobs, and like
So what was that anime that Twitter was up in arms about? That exactly the same thing you just said, a short girl with opai.
Oh, Uzaki-chan.
Uzaki, yes.
Yeah.
Similar to that? Like character what is it? Not actual personality, but like just the character model.
Yeah, like her personality, like it's so meh. And then most of the time the punchline is just like her boobs are
massive.
Just there. So I don't know. Like I'm not a fan of it. Like, to be perfectly honest, the original Kobayashi Dragon Maid, the manga, it gets pretty pervy.
Does
at
it?
Times. And then for the Kyoto Animation release, they dial it down and they
just make it cute.
They dilute it a bit and make it more on the cute side. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to be completely convinced about what season two is going to be. I'm still going to watch it and I'm still going to enjoy it. But like, we're at this point where we're adapting certain parts of the manga where I started to have a bit of a fallout with my love for the series. So we'll see how Kyoto Animation works their magic, because I totally enjoyed the anime version over the manga, just because Kyoto Animation did their magic.
I mean, obviously I didn't read the manga, but the anime was banger. I remember when I was watching it, you already know that I'm not a huge slice of life guy, and I would say that this falls into that category, right? When I was watching this show, I actually really looked forward to watching it, and it worked perfectly because it would kind of offset all the other serious shows that I was watching at the time, but still had a relatively good story to it. Because it's not like, you know, they're just hanging out and nothing happens. No, there is an overarching story, and it's really good. So, I guess listeners, yeah, if you haven't watched Kobayashi-san, go do so. Really good.
And if you haven't done so, watch the Inumakun teaser video, because we're going to jump right into that. Season 2 is coming out April 17th.
That
where
is,
we are
10 days from today.
Yeah, pretty much. And
holy cow.
Yeah, season
okay,
I'm looking forward to just everything that's going to be shown from this point, cuz like as I said, like we'll get into, I don't know how we want to do this. Do we want to talk about like recapping the first season? Do we want to talk about like what's coming up in the second season?
I think we should first of all recap the first season. But I guess spoiler warning on behalf of Chris, because I don't really care if he spoils it for me. So I'm gonna let Chris be a loose cannon here and then just.
So the way that I've arranged things and the way that I've worded things, we will spoil season one because we're going
to
talk about it. So
yeah.
If you haven't seen season one, watch season one
and then listen to this.
You're not going to watch season two. so watch season one just so that you don't get spoiled. And then the way that I won't spoil season two, I will allude to it. I'll talk about, you know, what the arcs might be about.
Sure.
I'll be as vague as possible just so that I don't completely ruin things, but I will be doing mild spoilers.
Okay.
Yeah. Like mild is in like Frank's hot sauce, like that kind of mild.
Hey, that's pretty spicy for me. You already know me.
I mean, mayonnaise is spicy for you, but.
Hey, chill. Pepper.
So let's recap season one, because we used Inumakun as the watch party selection for a couple of my friends at university. They all enjoyed it. For some of them, it was definitely different from what they normally would have watched. And yeah, I guess it's easy to say why, because usually when you look at this kind of show, and it always draws comparisons to My Hero Academia, where you think, okay, you have these school kids, they each have abilities, and then they're fighting some sort of evil. Meanwhile, it's interspersed with like stuff that happens at school, and so you kind of think, oh, it's gonna be like a school life shonen type of thing. But with Inumakun, it's kind of weird because it doesn't really have any signs of a shonen just yet, right? Nothing really gets serious. There isn't a whole lot of fighting. Any sort of fighting that happens isn't really serious. Most of the fighting that does happen, it has a lot of comedic undertones within it. So, how do we define what this show is? Because sometimes I have a hard time figuring it out myself, just because it's so different.
It's just built different. sorry. Yeah, I that's a very good question, because I don't know how to define it either. Like you said, it's not really a slice of life. I would more closely call it to a shonen. It's just, it's difficult to say it because, you know, you shonen, you say shonen, you think Dragon Ball Z, My Hero Academia. You think Naruto, Bleach, One Piece. And, you know, they're all action shows. But really, with shonen, this fits that description to me if you take the actual meaning of the word.
Where it's meant for a certain age.
Yeah, like young male adults. That's where I would say that this would fall into. It's obviously a comedy, right? It's a complete parody of demons and you know, everything that we think or expect them to be. And obviously everything that happens around Iruma is very ridiculous. So
that's a good way of putting it. Because it is a comedy, but like a lot of comedies out there where they tend to do, it's like a, like you use the word parody, and it's kind of like, you could almost call it that, because this is kind of, they kind of take a, with Irumakun, it's kind of a play on your typical isekai genre.
Yeah.
Where all of your expectations of what you would assume to be true are completely toppled over, where the demons are the good guys. Really, there really isn't any mention of like angels at all, but you know, like you normally think demons are like evil creatures that are hell-bent on destruction and domination, and then you just have these guys that play dodgeball.
play dodgeball
and sing a catchy anthem and and whatnot.
About eating humans, but you know. I would also equate it, like the reason why I call it a parody is because you could sort of equate it to something like Konosuba, in the sense that it's also a parody on isekais, because the main character, he's not overpowered, he's not OP, but somehow things just keep working out for him, kind of story, right? And in a very ridiculous way. This, I would say that this is more exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
Than Konosuba, but it's a similar take. I mean, Iruma is just a human. He can't even fly. Mm-hmm. He has to walk to school. But of course, everyone else around him is like, oh, big
brain.
He's just
not skipping leg day. Yeah.
Yeah, big brain. He's training his legs. So, and I think that's what I ended up really enjoying about this show. Just how overly ridiculous it is. Because you just don't know what to expect. You don't know what's going to happen next. You have to go into it with no expectations, because regardless if you do or not, they're just not going to be met.
Yeah. Although it kind of is it's a double-edged sword for me, where it's a show that like doesn't take itself seriously. It's random at times, because as you said, that you don't really know what's going to happen. But the downside to that is that when something finally happens, you kind of know how it's going to end.
True.
Because it's not serious, you can always expect that the good guys are going to win. Iruma is going to pull something out of his ass, where he just saves the day for whatever reason. And it does happen. It does happen later on in the series, I will admit. And it's almost like, it seems as though like he's creeping up, like his power level, it continually and like ranking creeps up so quickly that it's hard to get a hold of the pacing of the series. Cause right now he's a rank, as of season one, he's a rank 3, I think.
By the end, yeah.
Yeah, he's a rank 3. And like, when you think about it, the highest rank is 10. He's already a third of the way there. And like, if you think about someone like Amity, who is a rank 6, I believe, like she's only four away from the top ranking demon. So either it's like easy to rank up, where it's kind of like an exponential curve, where it's like easy to level up the first ranks. And then as you get to like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, it's just that much harder to get to the higher rankings. Cause like Ethan Mo ranks up.
I mean, if it's linear, he's flying through it. If it's linear, this is a speed run. mind you, fundamentally, he's still weak as hell.
Yeah.
But I think that's what's enjoyable about this show. But you're right. It is a double-edged sword in the sense that, you know, when everything was happening with, what's Senpai's name?
Ami-senpai.
With Ami-senpai, it was like, you could sort of see it coming. You didn't know how, but you just knew that Iruma was somehow...
He was gonna save the day.
Save the day. And
he was gonna win the cultural... He was gonna win the festival.
Yeah.
And like, even though he didn't win the festival...
They still give them a freaking
They still made a separate category.
Yeah.
So that he would rank up anyway. So... Yeah, it's a little...
I'll be honest, I actually, when I was watching that episode, because that one was actually a funny experience, because I joined the watch party late, so I joined it after he had already ranked up, but I hadn't seen how, so I went back and rewatched it, and when I was watching, I already knew he got ranked up, but then the moment that so the entire time I was expecting, okay, so they won first place. And even then, it still didn't meet my expectations because they go in and they don't win first place. The freaking broadcast club wins the first place. And then they make up a brand new separate award for it. I was like, what the fuck? That's so stupid.
Yeah. I loved it.
If they didn't win,
then you'd be like, okay, yeah, that's cool. Because like, you can't win everything.
But that's exactly what my thought process was, but I knew that he somehow ranked up anyway.
Yeah, so. But then like Iruma happens to rank up with every single event that happens. I guess that's a mild spoiler alert, but yeah. But either way, in terms of my experience with the show, I don't know if I haven't been this obsessed with the show in such a long time.
Yeah, you haven't.
Like, overall, I think maybe the last one that I was obsessed with was maybe, oh man, it's hard to say. I was hooked on Kaguya-sama. Mm-hmm. I still am, because they go into such a weird direction. Not a weird direction, but they go into a really interesting direction as of recent chapters.
How would you pit Iruma-kun versus Nozaki-kun? Ooh.
Like, they're different. Okay, they're...
No.
Because I know that
Nozaki-kun is still...
Because Nozaki-kun is actually, like, it's a brilliant... It's such a smart series. And...
Because I know you love that series.
I love it to death. And like, if I won the lottery, like I would fund a second season. Because Nozaki, it's an intelligent manga. Mm-hmm. it's an intelligent comedy with extremely good pacing, good amount of the way that they set up the joke, the way that they deliver the punchline, like flawless. With Eli McCoon, it's not trying to be smart in any way. It's just enjoyable. It's a fun show, and like sometimes that's all you need. I guess this can kind of go into why I like the show. So for those of you that have been listening to the show for a while, hopefully you're able to kind of know the kind of series that I like. I like two kinds of shows, pretty much. Either super deep emotional drama, romances, dramatic romances, coming of age stories, those types of shows. So you think like A Silent Voice, Clannad, Real Life. The other type are slice of life shows. Let's laugh and have a good time. Let's forget about life. Those kinds of shows. So slice of life shows, Nichiju, Azumanga Daioh, name any slice of life I've most likely seen or read it.
Cute girls doing camping things. Cute
yeah.
girls doing
music
cooking,
stuff.
Music.
Yeah. So with the Eli McCoon, it would be safe to say that it falls under the second category. It's extremely colorful, it's fun, it's lighthearted. Nothing serious happens, so you don't really have to get too involved and
committed.
But you don't have to be too committed to the storyline and like, oh yeah, shoot, okay. Like I hope this person doesn't die.
Well, to be honest with you, even after watching season one, there was not even like a... I mean, I guess Amity, but there's not really like a ship, you know, like waifu wars in this show in season one, in my opinion.
Little bit.
Very little. Like they don't focus on it, is what I'm saying. Well,
like within the show, or are you talking about like within like the fan...
No, within the show. I'm assuming that within the fan base, 100%, there's a bunch of people saying...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you kind of have the Clara versus Amelie. Those are kind of the two main armies that we've got. I'm a firm believer in the... I can't remember what the ship name is called, but anyway...
Oh, there's a ship name, of course, sorry.
Is it Ilu Amiri Amiri Ma?
Oh, like a mixture of the two names.
Azuma, okay, yeah. Yeah, whatever it is. But at the same time, as you know me, like I like to go deep with any series, regardless of how serious it actually is. Inherently, and like I thought about what my favorite part about Iluma actually was, and I think part of it has to do with just him growing as a character. And it's hard to say this because if you've only seen season one, he doesn't do any growing at all.
Come on, he ranked up three times.
He ranked up. But despite the fact that he ranked up, I mean, he kind of ranked up for really, really dumb.
Oh, super
under
stupid.
Dumb circumstances, no, he, right? Like you rank up remains... because you want. Like imagine going up a grade because you won a dodgeball tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean that is what he did, but
I mean that is what he did, right?
No, I would say that season one, he develops. There is some character development, and it all happens on the final episode,
where he comes to realize that, you know what? Yeah, he's stuck here.
Likes it.
Yeah, but and like,
he's
you might
given
as well...
a way out, and then he decides to stay.
Well, because he actually has, he's actually given the opportunity to live a life, mm-hmm. and it just, you know, it doesn't really matter where life will present itself. Like, if life presents itself to you, you exploit it. You take it.
Life finds a way.
So when it comes to going, deep with the Ulema, I wanted to kind of touch into one of the main themes of the show. Because whenever you find yourself drawn in to a particular form of art, whether it's reading a book or listening to music or watching a film or a TV show, you do so because there's something about it that attracts you or gravitates you towards it. You listen to a song because you might like the groove, or more often than not, it's about the lyrics that are in the song. You find yourself relating to it in some way. You feel as though the song itself can explain what it is that you're feeling far more than you could yourself. And then with a lot of shows, it's kind of the same thing. Sometimes we're gravitated towards certain parts of a show, such as the production, the animation, the music. We're there to consume the art form. And if the art is good, then it's all the better. And sometimes it's about the characters that are in the show. Sometimes it's the main character and how you find a bit of yourself in them. And a story isn't really good unless you have a character that that needs to grow in some way. Development is really the driving, character development is one of the main driving points behind most stories out there, and will lead to a more, a more convincing story. You know how, like, in a lot of Disney movies, they'll have that song about how they're missing something in their life.
And then they have to find it,
right? So, like, Hercules has Go the Distance. Mulan has Reflection. Little Mermaid has part of Your World.
Hakuna Matata. No, I'm joking.
What else is there? Yeah. Anyway, I talked a little bit in the last episode about the similarities between Ulema and My Hero Academia. Part of it has to do with the setting. You're in a school, everyone has abilities, but also really the main characters. You have the whole Deku versus Ulema, where they're these short, weak, meek, frail human beings.
Powerless, yeah.
And really, yeah,
literally powerless,
right? Because Deku started off with no quirk.
What is it?
And like, that was one of the things that I originally loved about My Hero Academia. Luigi's Sorry. Doing
the, I'm doing, like, I'm doing the back and forward thing and video. I love that gif, by the way, of just him crying, smiling, and going back and forth as a kid. It's such a good reaction.
Me when I try to tell myself that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. It's so good. But yeah, continue. Sorry. Yeah, no, essentially they're both powerless, or at least they start off that way, right?
And that's one of the things that I originally loved about My Hero Academia, was that it's the story of a nobody becoming somebody. And with Deku, it wasn't just a nobody becoming, like, somebody. He became a somebody.
The somebody. You know, the future somebody.
Right? And he... The whole idea...
Which, by the way, season 5 of My Hero Academia started in... It's all right.
Will I I don't know if I'll watch it. It's just right. I've had a fallout with the show.
It kind of lost the whole vibe of, you know, the nobody becoming a somebody. Now it's just like, eh? Anyway, but yeah, I guess that's news.
My Hero Academia is season 5. So with Ulema-kun, Ulema has the same kind of personality, But the thing that separates him with Deku is that at the very beginning of the show, while Deku had he had a drive, like he had a motivation. He had this strong sense of justice and morality, extremely benevolent and just very altruistic, which is kind of fitting that he got One for All, because One for All itself is a very altruistic quirk in that it's one quirk for all people. With Iluma, zero drive and motivation, right? His only drive was to just like stay hidden, don't get noticed, just kind of just cruise by, right? Just
really coast, bad at that, hey?
Just coast, don't do anything, just literally just be there, right?
Survive.
And the whole notion of doing things for others and the ability to say no, it usually derives from some psychological, it's like a psychological response, which from my experience, because I've experienced the same thing. Like I'm a yes person. I don't say no. It's usually like I will put other people on top of myself. So I guess that's kind of me projecting myself into Iluma. But like a lot of the times when people do that, it's usually because they have some lack of self-worth or like a lack of respect for themselves, which is why they'll put other people on top of over themselves. And with Iluma, where like he has no goals or motivation, I think that might either be because he actually, you know, just has zero goals or motivation, or he doesn't really know what it is that he needs. And that's why one of my favorite parts of the show are his interactions with Amelie. Not only is it because she's one of the best female characters ever, but also it kind of like that's really where most of Iluma's progression happens, is when he's discussing this idea of, I guess the word that they use is ambition. And when we track Iluma's progression as a person trying to find out what he actually wants from life, it's kind of why I really like when you talked about how a lot of his development happens in the last episode. I think I agree with that, because throughout his entire life, when you're stuck in survival mode, you don't really get the luxury of trying to figure out what it is that you want from life. Because really your only goal, your current objective, survive, right?
Yeah, you keep looking outwards rather than inwards. Mm-hmm. You never try to figure out who you are. You just first try to figure out how do you stay alive.
Yeah, how can I get food? How do I not get eaten? But now that he's actually able to do this, he starts to go from a person that just wants to have fun to have something to actually work towards. So I'm going to talk a little bit about ambition before we get into other parts of the show. But ambition is one of my favorite, like, I mean, it's a central theme of what demons are. And it's the thing that Iluma himself is trying to figure out throughout the series. And he eventually creates his own definition or his own, he's able to define what his ambition is as a result of events that transpire during one of the arcs. So the idea of ambition was, I'm going to talk a little bit about the ship because it does involve Iluma and Amelie, and I'm just,
spoilers.
You're going to have to deal with it. It's going to be the first, it's going to be the first arc of season two. So I'm not going to spoil anything too far into the series.
I just want to remind you, you've already spoiled it, if I'm not wrong,
I spoiled it in our first draft.
Did
I spoil it in the last episode?
I think, not even the last episode. I think you spoiled it on like a previous episode, like maybe. Like 6-7, like early on. Unless now I'm just, all my memories of all my discussions with you are now just mush. Of like, was that a podcast episode or not?
Yeah, it's wrong.
So I could be wrong. I don't know.
So just So just regarding ambition, if you remember from the first meeting between Ilima and Amelie, where, and then Luigi cuts out again. All right, moving on. So in the first Hatsukoi memory reading, where Amelie finds or like grabs Ilima after she finds out that he's a human, Amelie asks him what his ambition is. And then Ilima replies with, to continue having good times with everyone, even just something like that would be enough, right? So his ambition is, I just want to have a good time with everyone, which is a really, really weak ambition. And Amelie calls him out on it. So she says, yeah, she that's just it out an right empty... away. Sorry?
She points it out right away, yeah.
Yeah, she says, that's just an empty ideal. All I want is ambition. And like Ilima doesn't know what she's talking about because he has just ill-informed ideas of what it actually is. So like as we get older, and I mean, I'm only 27, but I feel as though I'm pretty close to getting a grasp to at what it is that I actually want from life. But as we get older, the hope is that we get wiser and more mature and we get to be a little bit more mature with our goals and desires in life. And like a lot of times, like we'll fail to make that distinction between idealistic, like the idealism behind like expedient desire and like proper ambition. And like, this is something that the series tries to talk about. It's like, what is the difference between short-term pleasure versus true ambition? And like this is what the student council arc is actually going to go towards, because we the student council arc deals with someone trying to overthrow Amelie as the president of the student council, and it really becomes a war between demons satisfying their short-term pleasure versus demons that want to actually pursue true ambition. So I guess from a real world standpoint, like ideal desires are usually short-term pleasures that we want right now and usually don't have any substance to them. So things like, you know, like I want to lose weight, I want to be rich, I want to like bang as many people as possible. Right. And like, there's nothing wrong with like any of those things.
No, not at all.
But like, they're pretty surface level goals, right? There's no meat. There's no meat to that bone. So ambition is all about.
Yeah. If someone told me like, yeah, I want to be rich. Cool. Don't
yeah,
we
or
all?
Like someone, or someone says like, oh man, look, I just want to bang as many chicks as I want. The other thing is like, all right, you know.
Great.
You do you, bud.
Cool. Have you started planning for retirement?
And so when it comes to real ambition, it's about having something that you can work towards that you know will be life-sustaining. It's what gives life its intrinsic meaning, right? It's like how many times have you like you wanted something? And then, like, the second you get it, you're, like, even more miserable than when you didn't have it. Yeah, that's kind of the thing. So,
yeah.
So, in Ilima-kun, we'll have the student council crisis arc. And alongside this pleasure versus ambition battle, Amelie begins to have second doubts on her identity and who she is. So without spoiling anything, she has an internal conflict, and then she tells Ilima that I will literally resign as student council president if it means that we'll be together and then you just take me as I am. Take me as I am. So I mean, as a reader, I was thinking like, oh, like nice. it'd be cool, like, you know, nice, but Ilima's not going to do it. And of course, like, he doesn't do it. And like he uses the exact words that she used for him at the beginning of the series, where it's like, oh, you know, that's just an empty ideal. All that I'm interested in is ambition. And Enma tells her that if the student council isn't helping you reach your goal, then by all means, like, you can leave. But deep down, you and I both know that you need to be the student council president in order for you to reach the goals that you want to achieve. And then things conclude with Amelie realizing that between being the student council president and getting Enma, she can have both. And that kind of goes with Amelie's bloodline ability. And we'll go into the abilities later. That's kind of the second half of this episode. But her ability is for her powers to increase, like, the more she wants something. So, you know.
Interesting.
There's a kind of a, there's going to be some spicy stuff that happens later.
Spicy, yes.
So that's kind of my look at ambition, and there's gonna be a lot of that because we'll eventually get into the ambition of each of the characters and what each of them want, and yeah, wait, what?
No, I can just imagine, like, I don't know if this is how it's gonna play out, but since you just said that we're gonna, you know, learn each character's ambitions and whatnot, I can just imagine the short little, like, joke that they could play with Kaim of, like, everyone's saying their ambition, and he's like, I want girls!
It'll probably be that.
Yeah. I see, you can talk about all the ambition and stuff because, well, you know what's coming, right? But from season one, they didn't really focus on that, right? So when I had to sit down and think what are a couple of things that I enjoyed about the show, and why would I recommend it to anyone? I mean, I already said that the comedy is pretty much right up my alley. You know, it's kind of unpredictable. You don't really know what the next punchline is gonna be, so it always keeps you guessing. It always keeps you on your toes, and I like that. But I didn't want to just say, funny show is funny, you know?
I hate that when, like, that's all people say. It's like, oh yeah, it was really, really funny. Like,
yeah, it's a comedy. That's its job. It should be funny.
Can you explain?
That's like someone saying, I like The Office because it makes me laugh. Like, okay, me too, but...
I started hating The Office the more people started talking about how they love The Office. I'm such a
hipster.
I'm such a hipster. I'm such a contrarian. That's why I'm not going to watch Attack on Titan until, like, later this summer.
Well, see, you would still be watching it while it's still hot because it hasn't really ended.
And then I'll read the manga. So I'll be ahead of you.
This is nothing to do with Iruma-kun, but I actually told my friends when we watched the final episode, I said, like, I might read the manga. And they all said, if you read it, we're not watching this with you. So I was like, oh, shit, what do I do? No, I'll probably wait for the anime. It's too good of an action show to I don't know. I like things being animated when it's fights like that, you know? But anyway. So, yeah, like I said, I didn't want to say that, you know, comedy show is comedic. So... I had to sit back and just kind of wonder, what do I want to talk about? And I knew that you were going to talk about the finding yourself, you know? That's your beloved angle.
That's always my angle.
It is your... Tora.
And I think it's easy... It's always easy to talk about something when it's something that, like, that resonates with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I love the whole finding yourself motive that shows go through. And the other thing is that I just want to talk a little bit about real, not like a whole lot, but like Real Life, for example. Because it's not a great show. It's a good manga. It's a really bad show.
Well, okay, season one was great.
Season one was beautiful. And then the second they the second they put their foot to the pedal and skipped everything. Oh man. But I'm going to read real life again, because in real life, Kaizaki's son, he was 27 when he went back in time. I'm 27 now, so it's going to hurt that much more when I read it again.
Damn, he was 27? Fuck.
Yeah, I know, man. It's like...
That's not that old. Oh, and he was already like needing to go back in time. Jesus.
Which,
you know,
which just goes to show that it's been 10 years since I've last been in high school.
Oh yeah, holy shit. Oof.
So...
it's been 10 years since I entered high school. It's almost. Almost.
Like grade 11, almost. Right?
Yeah. But yeah, so I wanted to find what interested me about this show other than the fact that it's funny. And it's funny that you say that you bring up the fact that, you know, it resonated with you. Now I'm not gonna use those words, and I guess mild trigger warning if anyone of our listeners are overly religious. But I mean, mind you, this is a show about demons.
Yeah, so. Like if you've already watched like the entire season and you're
a devout Catholic,
you get queasy at the thought of like talking about demons or anything. What was that song where that guy was like grinding the devil and then like a bunch of people got.
That's very relevant for this, actually. Yeah. It's Montero by Lil Nas X.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of that kind of music, but I actually quite enjoy that song just because of what it did. And it's funny because that ties in perfectly to the music that I do listen to that I was going to mention on here. Cause you know, I never really wanted to get into too much like religion or anything in the podcast, right? But I was raised a Catholic. You know, keyword the words was raised a Catholic. What am I now? I don't know. I don't know how to classify it. I know what I am, but I don't know how to word it. My go-to answer is usually agnostic. But I just to get a and kind of similar to what Lil Nas X did, just to get a reaction out of people, because I enjoy that now because I'm an asshole. Not really, but you know, I just like seeing how people react. I usually drop the bomb that I align myself a bit with the teachings of the Church of Satan, and you know, that comes off really poorly, which is why I enjoy saying it. But if you do some research into them, they're actually atheists, you know, and their teachings half the time is just don't be an asshole. So that's what I follow. But that gets reflected a lot into the music that I listen to. And that ties into what you were saying, that, you know, a lot of the time you consume media that resonates with you. So a lot of the media that a lot of the music that I listen to now is very, very thought provoking metal, whether it's by the, the patterns in the drumming, or the lyrics, and you know, as I've been listening to this music more and more, a lot of it is satanic, and a lot of it has to do with very well educated bands making very, very well-written songs about demons and how you summon them. As I was watching the show, every single time that a new character popped up, I was like, wait a minute, I know that name. I know a song about that demon.
So if you haven't caught on with the show, each of the names, or most of the names in the Makun, they use the name of some demon from demonology, whether they're from like a grimoire or they're from the Bible. They're from a variety of sources, but that's kind of what they used when they decided to name some of the characters. And
which I enjoyed a lot. I mean, I like the fact that they're, you know, taking some aspects of, you know, history, mm-hmm. and bringing it into the show.
And not just that, but like not only are they using the names, but they're actually kind of paying homage to the either like the personality or the powers that some of these demons had,
possess, right? whether or not
you think like demons are real, like that's beyond the point. You could even look at this from like a mythical standpoint, where 100%. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, you know, the basilisk had the ability to petrify people.
Same as Medusa.
Mind flayers had the ability to eat your thoughts. So each of the demons from demonology, they had their own ability, or they had their own characteristics. They had something that they were known for. And Ithamakun, they use it liberally. Some of them are a little bit closer than others. Some of them are a little bit further off. But I'll let you continue our exposition into this part of the episode.
Yeah, because some of them are like pretty much like that's it. That's the character. And then some others, like, you know, like it probably could have, the name could have worked with another character, but, you know, it's fine. So I'm only really going to talk about like the main, like, I guess, four, maybe five characters, by that being Alice, Asmodeus, Clara, who's Valak, Amity, Azazel, AKA best girl, according to Chris, because he actually wrote that here on my notes.
Did you actually keep that?
Yeah, I kept it. It's right there. You know what? Nabarius Sensei as well, right. the teacher.
I'm glad that you did those, because I talked about the rest of the Misfit class. Because I think there is, there's some cool stuff. And I'll talk about my speculations as to where the show might go with this. Great, but anyway, I'll let
in
you
season
start.
In season one, we don't get to see many of the abilities or I guess the personalities of the rest of the class. Mm-hmm. The only one that you do get to see is probably like Sapnock. And then a little bit of like, what's that other girl? The idol. Kerori?
Yep.
Krokil?
Yep, you get a little bit from Andro as well.
You get a little bit, yeah. But in the end, I wanted to focus on the ones that we you see the most screen time with. Mm-hmm. Mind you, the other two characters that you see a lot of screen time with is Sullivan. So, Grandpa Sully, we know Demon by that name. So, I just wanted to say that straight out. Couldn't find any demon to relate him. I don't know, Monsters, Inc., maybe. Monsters, Inc., you know, he gets fond of a human little girl. No.
What other Sullivans are out there?
I don't know. And then Opera. Once again, I couldn't find a demon named Opera, but I don't know. I wanted to mention Opera because they're just cool.
You say Opera or Oprah?
Opera.
Oh, sorry, I heard Oprah.
Oh, no, I guess I said it quickly, but I read it like in Spanish, Opera. Yeah,
my favorite demon is Oprah.
You get a demon.
You get a familiar. You get a familiar. You all get familiars.
So
there has to be an Oprah demon. They need to throw it in somewhere.
That'd be funny.
Now, you know, like if you remember if you ever watched like the B movie, there is like a B version of every celebrity.
I never watched the B movie.
Okay, so any like
I should have.
Yeah, so
I
like,
should just for the memes.
So yeah, so Barry, he ends up on like B Larry King, and it's literally Larry King but as a B. Anyway, go on. You can continue. I'll stop deviating.
I mean, I guess the first one that we get introduced to, aside from Sullivan and Opera, is Asmodeus. So that's a big name. I personally know multiple songs with the name Asmodeus.
Okay, I've been talking about this with so many people. Is it Asmodeus or Asmodeus?
I don't know. I say Asmodeus because that's how one of the songs that I listen to literally says. Mm-hmm. If you listen to Year Zero by Ghost, a band from Sweden, they don't scream, so you might actually enjoy their music, Chris. They say Asmodeus. Well, they sing it, but they say it like that, Asmodeus.
Yeah.
So that's just how I grew to say it, because I've, well, sang that song in the car so many times.
Yeah, because the way that I divided it is that Deus, meaning God, and then Asmo is...
Whatever Asmo is. Asmo.
Ivano, meaning one, and rail, meaning rail. Monorail.
Yeah. Whichever. I guess that would be a question for probably Wikipedia to see how you actually pronounce it. But yeah, Asmodeus is a big name in demonology, referred to as one of the seven princes of hell, which makes sense because Alice's mom is one of the...
one of the 13 crowns.
13 crowns, yes. Yeah. And they are... in that classification of the seven princes of hell, which is Binsfeld's classification of demons, Asmodeus is the prince of lust. Which is what his mom is. So, I mean, you could also make the stretch that Alice himself maybe doesn't lust after Iruma directly, but perhaps his approval or his attention. Hmm. Definitely his attention. Well,
it's,
right?
I mean, it's not lust in like any sexual way, but it's definitely like a devotion.
Exactly. There's he's highly devoted and committed to Iruma. But yeah, I thought that one was a very, very direct, I guess, relationship, mostly to his mom, just because that's literally in her title. You know, she's the 13th crown representing lust. Great.
Yeah, because he's like...
And she, plus she's a succubus.
She taught all the succubi.
Yeah, she taught the succubi, the current succubi teacher, which I thought was great. So I'm actually hoping to see more of her in the next season.
I loved her appearance, like when she finally showed up.
She was funny. She was really funny. So I really hope to see more of her. So yeah, and I also thought that's very fitting for such a big name to be used with Alice, because obviously I don't know what his background is or his family history in the show, but they're clearly from a big or like a rich kind of...
They're from a bougie
very
family.
Prestigious family. They have like butlers and everything helping around when, for example, someone like Clara doesn't, you know, she has like a bunch of siblings and just her mom.
Yeah, they're definitely from like a lower, from the opposite side of the...
Completely opposites. And then that you know, that leads me into Clara, who is Valak. And Valak is the name of the demon. And holy cow, if there's not a more fitting... I think they looked for a demon to inspire a character here, and I think they built Clara after reading this demon's description rather than building Clara's character and then looking up which one fits the best. I don't know.
I think that they... Part of me thinks that they started off with the demon name and then base it off of that.
At least with Clara, man, because...
Well, with a lot of them, actually, because a lot of the misfit students... They're really, really close. I would say they're even closer than Clara.
Really?
Some of them are direct.
Like just, that's that demon that's did them. That. So
yeah. And okay. Anyway, continue. Please continue.
Well, yeah. So Valak, demon described in the Grimoire, The Lesser Key of Solomon. Pretty famous one. And normally depicted as an angelically winged boy riding a two-headed dragon with the power of finding treasures. I really like that because angelically winged boy, that to me screams innocence. Mm-hmm. And Clara is a very, very innocent character. Even when she tries to join the succubi class, and even when the teacher gives her so many pointers, it's just... Nope. Too innocent, you know? Too there's no word for it. It's just too innocent. Mm-hmm. Riding a two-headed dragon, well, is made very clear that her sandals are actual characters in the show.
Connor and Murph. Yes. For those of you who want to know what their names are.
Connor and Murph.
I kind of want to buy those slippers. If those slippers are available,
they look cute, man.
I might buy some. Holy and, shit, they are available.
Of course what they the are. Hell? Dude, come on. And also, she has the power of finding treasures. She pulls anything and everything out of her pockets, right? So a little bit more specific, she's able to find treasure in her pockets, but alas, it fits. So, you know, and I guess since they didn't really use one of the major demons in demonology, that also kind of fits us with the fact that she's not from a prestigious or well-known family name. I'm really hoping that in the next season we do get to see her older brother and her dad, unless they keep that as a running joke that they're just not there. But I'm hoping we get more Valak family musicals.
Dum bum 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 ba dum bum 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 ba dum bum.
I really enjoyed that. I was laughing my ass off when that came around.
I think the hardest laugh I got was in the last episode where they were trying to like cook the meal for Iluma, and then
oh, she describes the meal
as Alice was thinking, like, oh man, like I can only imagine what Valak is doing or to prepare for food. And then like it just a jump cuts like a 1 second scene of like Clara's family like doing a dance around a giant cauldron.
yeah. I remember that. Yeah. I really enjoyed that family dynamic. I thought it was fucking hilarious, especially when they showed up and like Iruma and Alice, I don't know what they were expecting, but it clearly wasn't that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think their appearance in the festival was great. And you know, the other big character, Azazel, Amiri, this one didn't really fit. we talked about that in our first draft, but Azazel is not really even a character in historically. So it was kind of interesting that during the Christian narrative, it became the name of a fallen angel, even though really Azazel is the name of a place rather than an actual individual. But the fallen angel itself was given the characteristic of, you know, known for weaponizing humans. And as far as you've said, Amity does not do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually Sabnok who creates weapons. So I thought this one, I think they just kind of took the name and said, hey, that's a well-known fallen angel name, you know, let's just run with that one. And they called it a day. I still like it, whatever. Great. She's still best girl, right? So I'm glad we agree on that, by the way.
Yeah, so with Azazel, is there anything about his personality that might be linked to Amity's bloodline ability?
So you said that her bloodline ability was...
So her bloodline ability is, it's called Romanticist, where by kind of like, by being confident enough in her own ability, she can draw out more power she's able to draw out more power. And it's kind of like a double-edged sword where that if she isn't confident in her ability, her strength actually wanes. So I don't know if there's any sort of link that you can make between that and maybe something about how Azazel lived or something about his personality.
I'm looking, but the main description of Azazel is as a scapegoat. And I don't think that fits.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Yeah, because like it's almost like because it's also called, their ability is also called the King of Delusions, where it's like you're faking your confidence. So it's like you fool your, it's like if you can even fool yourself into thinking that you're stronger than whoever it is that you're facing, you'll still come out on top. So it's kind of like this whole like faith in yourself. So again, like, I don't know if that has anything to do with the original demon, but.
Nah.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing anything about that in here. So. Yeah. I think this one, they just took a relatively popular name. Because actually, Azazel is, if more than just in, because it doesn't even appear in the Bible, if I'm not wrong. But Azazel is a very common name for demons in other media.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen other anime where Azazel is a name used for a fallen angel. And apparently there is even a Marvel character with the name Azazel. So
I wonder,
maybe we'll see Azazel in the MCU.
Like, I'm trying to think of, like, because Amelie's dad works the border patrol, and like the border is kind of that. I'm just trying to draw at straws right now, but like the border between like the human world and Hell's is kind of like that transition point. So maybe that's kind of like being cast out of heaven is sort of like that transition from heaven to hell. That border between, I don't know. I'm just trying to make something fit.
Yeah, there's no clear connection. So this is one of the ones where I was like, that's unfortunate, but whatever.
All right.
She's still a great character. So yeah. And from what I saw, her dad's pretty cool too. What's his name? Henry?
Henry.
Henry.
Such Sup, a dad Henry. Name, Henry.
And then the other demon that I looked up was Nibirius, who is the teacher, Snape.
Kaneko Sensei.
Yeah. And this one, there's also not a whole lot on the demon other than it's a three-headed dog with like raven feet. So I think that's... So you mentioned... So I don't remember seeing... Nibirius is familiar. Do we see it in season one?
Yeah,
but I remember
he uses the Cerberus to like break the the barriers when.
Oh yes. Okay, well yeah. So his familiar is a Cerberus, which is literally the three-headed dog from like, you know, Greek mythology,
mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because Nibirius is also known as Cerberus, even though technically they're not related at all, the demon and the Greek mythology three-headed dog. But there are some connections with Nibirius Sensei. If you look at both the demon and the dog, because the dog guards the underworld in Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very fitting for... You know, Gallego Sensei, who is the teacher of the misfit class, which is in like the basement of the school. Kind of same thing with like Harry Potter, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. You know, the three-headed dog guards the trap door. Very similar, right? So same idea. I thought that was kind of neat. There's at least a connection there. And with the raven, I didn't even have this in my notes, but that would kind of make sense why he turns into like a little bird whenever he becomes...
Yeah, is there a connection to why he turns into a bird, or is that just for the lols? I don't
know. I think it might be more for the lols, but if he turns into like a bit of a raven, then it kind of makes sense because the demon is a three-headed dog with raven feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. But, I mean, the demon is a Marquis of Hell, which would explain his very, what's the word for it? Very high standards kind of way that he carries himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very proud and very, well, he's Professor Snape. Come on.
And actually, the other thing I was thinking about was... we'll hopefully we'll meet Kaleko Sensei's best friend in the second season.
Friends.
Yeah, I know, right? That's what the students said when they met him. But he has his best friend Balam Sensei, who in demonology was also a demon that had three heads. So there's kind of a connection with there. Balam Sensei was
interesting.
Balam Sensei, he taught. What did he teach? He was a history teacher. That's right. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff there. I'm not going to talk about Balam Sensei because we'll get to that when he finally shows himself. He's a really cool. He's a cool cat.
He's a cool cat. And I mean, that's really as far as I wanted to go with the demon names. I mean, every other name to me was more like, hey, I've heard that name. I know that name. Mm-hmm. I know a song about how to summon that demon. I wanted to talk about that because that's something that I found very interesting and very entertaining in the show.
Did you?
Just because it has to do with, you know, stuff that I like.
Did you spoil any? Did you accidentally spoil yourself with any of like the storyline from doing some of the research really. That you did?
Not really. No. No.
Okay.
Which is, I'm pretty happy about that.
Actually. Okay, because like, so I'm gonna talk about the misfits because the misfits it's like the way. This is just pure speculation, but other people have thought this as well, and so I know I'm not crazy, but each of the misfits, a lot of them, in terms of who they were named after, because if you look at any names from the Ars Goetia, which is the book from the Lesser Key of Solomon, which contains the names, I think it's like 72 names of demons. Demons themselves have a hierarchy. Some of them are like princes, kings, marquises, so on and so forth. When I see the abnormal class, like if Ilima were to be the next demon lord, like the abnormal class could potentially be like the next 13 crowns. Because each of them are kind of named after a fairly high ranking demon. And so if you were to think, oh, like, is this like the origin or something of what these demons are? Then eventually like these demons from the show, from the abnormal class will eventually become these high ranking demons. Because over time, each of these students will eventually rank up a little bit more and more throughout as the series grows. Because right now, a lot of them are still rank one, rank two. I think Alice is rank four, Ilima's rank three, Clara's rank three, and eventually they'll all rank up a little by little over time. So part of me thinks is that this is kind of the next generation of the demon hierarchy.
Of like the 13 crowns?
They'll be the next 13 crowns pretty much. With Ilima at the top, like Alice's ambition is to literally be Ilima's right-hand man. So like, would Alice be the head of the 13 crowns in the same way that who's the head of the 13 crowns right now? It is Beelzebub.
Beelzebub?
Yeah, Beelzebub, yeah.
Beelzebub.
So yeah, it's kind of the way that I see it. So I'll talk a little bit about the misfits because each of the misfits, As with most of the demon names, they're named after some sort of demon. Most of them are high ranking demons in some way. They're princes or marquises or whatever it is. So,
you know, now that I'm looking, I have the 72 demons and you're right, it is 72. I have all their names up here and
a lot of their names are found.
they're pretty much all from the Lesser Key of Solomon.
So I'll go in alpha order. So starting off with Agaris Piquero? Piquedo? Agaris. So Agaris in the show, I'll explain who these are because it took me a while to like get to remember who each of these characters were. I just knew like, oh, like it's the lion guy. I completely forgot their names. So I'll talk about who they were. So Agaris in the show, he's the sleepy orange-haired guy. He wears a sleeping mask and then he's always around. He's like always hovering on his cloud pillow.
On a cloud, right? Yeah.
So his power is called My Area, and it allows him to manipulate the ground and the earth. And then later he ends up with a variant of his power where he's able to manipulate soil and trees and like roots that are found underneath the ground. And then in demonology, Agares was a high-ranking demon riding a crocodile. And then he had the power to control the earth. So pretty much a pretty good conversion from demonology into Inamakun, dealing with
riding earth. Upon a crocodile, carrying a hawk on his fist.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at Agares' sleeping mask, it kind of looks like a crocodile. Pull up a photo of Agares right now. His sleeping mask is very lizard-like. So,
oh yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So I think that's kind of where that's the connection. Funny.
And yeah, it says causes earthquakes and grants noble titles.
Yeah, I ignored some of the powers which didn't really have much to do with it. A lot of them were able to grant titles and like give familiars, but I considered it irrelevant to the
to Irumaku.
A lot of the demons were intellectuals and like they taught stuff, like they were teachers. But yeah, it only applied to some of them. Speaking of which, Alaker Schneider. So again, for those of you that aren't good with the names, in the show he's the lion with the derpy eyes. And then he's always the one that talks in like Voltaire-esque quotes. He always like speaks in proverbs and whatnot.
Yes, that guy.
Knowledge is power or something like that. Although that wasn't Voltaire, that was Francis Bacon.
Doesn't he hit us with like a I eat, therefore I am? He says that in the festival.
It was a variant of that. It was like I am something, therefore I am. Yeah. Yeah, he's always talking in proverbs. We don't actually know what his power is. Or at least like I don't remember. But anyway,
what's the demon name?
Demon name is Alaker.
Alaker. Okay. So it's not the last.
Yeah.
Name
so he in the show he is famous for being extremely intelligent. He's an intellectual. He ends up getting the highest grade in the class, which is what allows him to rank up. Like he's not special in terms of like magic ability or strength. He's just extremely smart. So in demonology, Alaker. Again, he was a name of the Lesser Key of Solomon, among other grimoires. So he took the form of a soldier with a lion head. So kind of a 100% spot on. And then he was known to teach astronomy, history, literature, philosophy, and other liberal arts. So yeah, it's kind of...
It's kind of him.
Moving on. Andrew Jazz. So in the show, he's the guy that always steals stuff.
He likes money.
He likes jewels and I was gonna spoil a fun part of the show. So his power pit. The pit tells the user about hidden treasures and items in another person's possession, and then it also shows you the route in order to steal them. He also has the ability to turn his hands or his fingers into snake-like tendrils, which allows him to steal stuff a little bit easier. And in demonology, Andro is named after Andromalius. And Andromalius is depicted as a man holding a snake in his hand. So holding a snake in his hand, snake-like fingers, I think that's kind of the connection. Andromalius had the power to locate hidden treasure and was able to discern evildoers and dishonest dealings. He had the power to bring back both stolen objects as well as the thieves who stole them. And then he was also known for punishing thieves and other evildoers. So I don't know, he's kind of like a lawful evil kind of guy. Trying to think of like Andro as a character, but I don't know. I couldn't really make a connection. To that, unfortunately. Andro is one of the characters that we know a little bit more of. He becomes a little involved in the next couple arcs. And then I think, yes, Shax becomes more prevalent after that. Because really, like some of these students don't really get the limelight that much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Shax becomes a bit more of a like more of a supporting cast member than the others. So I'll just keep on going. Next one is we'll go with who do we want to talk with? We'll go with Krakel. I can't remember the alpha order, but Krakel Kelodi. So in the show, she was the idol character. So she was the one, the shy white haired girl with glasses. She was the one that took the form of the Devi idol Kulamu. And this one was a bit of a, it was pretty similar. There were slight differences from what I researched. But Kilody's power ice surface allowed her to control the temperature of water, specifically to freeze stuff. So she's able to freeze the particles in the air and then turn an air into a sub-zero area. And then in demonology, a couple of similarities. Krakel, I can't remember if it's a Krakel or Krossel, but Krakel's powers all resolved around water. So Krakel could imitate the sounds of rushing water. He could locate water, and then he could also warm the temperature of water. So I kind of found it weird that it was kind of the opposite. I couldn't find out whether or not you could Krakel could do both, where he could both freeze and warm. But from what I researched, it was only warming water, whereas Krakel from the Ilima, from the anime, was the opposite, where they froze water. So that's kind of, there's just kind of a weird difference there. Luigi did have to step out, so I'm going to continue talking. I'll talk about Kaim later, but we'll move on to Gap Goemon, or Garp. Found a couple different spellings with this character. So for those of you that don't remember, Gap in the show, he's the furry looking guy with a katana and the samurai speech. So he's the one that kept on saying like "de gozaru." So he's the furry looking guy with the katana. And his power is, oh man, I'm going to butcher this, cause I wrote it without practicing it. Kamaitachi. And which means wind sword, apparently. So his power gives him the ability to manipulate wind, whether he creates a wind sword or he launches a wind slash type attack. And relating that to demonology, in demonology, Gap, he doesn't really have a lot of connection to the show. This was one of the other outliers. It's kind of similar to Azazel, where it was based off of a demon, but there isn't a lot of connection. The original Gap had zero connection to wind whatsoever. If anything, the original Gap was kind of similar to Alucard, where taught liberal arts and taught a bunch of other subjects. One thing I found was that Gap was also able to incite love. I kind of wrote that down, but there wasn't a whole lot of connection to the anime Gap, because wasn't a whole lot of inciting of love with them. So I kind of called, I just wrote it, but I don't think it has any connection whatsoever. So one of the outliers. Another outlier, and I could not find any connection whatsoever. I looked up everywhere, but this was Elisabetta. So in the show, she's the tall blonde haired girl. She has the two long horns. She's the one that everyone calls Nesan. So her power is favorability, which is an ability that allows her to release a pheromone of sorts. And any man who smells the scent will be compelled to gain her favor. That's her ability. So it's almost kind of a succubi kind of power, where it's all about attracting men. But unfortunately, I couldn't find any relation to any demon. I looked up on the demon wikia. I can't remember what it was called, but tried looking up Ix, Elizabeth. I thought maybe it was a succubus of some kind. So I tried looking up names of succubi, but yeah, I couldn't find anything. So, nothing came up. If I do find something, I'll maybe I'll remember to bring it up later. But as far as I know, there isn't really any connection to any other character. We've got four more. I'm trying to think of what order to do them, because I'm trying to think of what Luigi might be interested in talking about. I've got Sabnock, Kaim, and Shax left, and then I do have one more. I don't know if I want to talk about it, because it might be like a mind blowing, because there is one more person in the Misfits class. If you were paying attention in the anime, then you know that there, for some reason, there was like someone that was there but is never mentioned. But we'll get to that when Luigi comes back. I guess we'll talk about Shax next. So Shax is the short blonde haired guy. He kind of looks like Kaminari from My Hero Academia, because both of them have blonde hair. They have black accents in their blonde hair. So Shax is the one that's normally seen playing video games. So his power. Luigi's back. Yes? No? You're back. Okay. So Shax is, his power is controller, kind of like the go with like his whole video game persona. So controller allows him to steal a single sense from a target. So he can take a person's eyesight, their hearing, their sense of smell, so on and so forth. And
I'm back.
You are back. Welcome back. You missed three characters, which I think is okay.
That's fine. I'll listen to it.
Yeah, because I mean, the thing is that two of them didn't have any connection whatsoever, so you didn't miss much. Gap, who is the fuzzy samurai guy.
Yes.
Wind power, but no connection to demonology. And then Ix, who is Nesan, the tall blonde-haired girl.
Yes.
No relation to any demon. Yeah.
I do know a song by Ghost about a girl named Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
And I was trying to find a connection.
What did she do?
I forget.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything. I searched and I tried researching Succubi, but I didn't get anything. So with Shax, Shax was pretty much one for one copy, because in demonology Shax was able to take away a person's sight, hearing, and understanding. He did a bunch of other stuff, but those were kind of the main points. So direct usage of their powers. Sabnock Sablo, so he's a tall muscular dude with a spiky hair. His power is kind of weak, to be perfectly honest. So his power, weapon creation, allows him to bite down on a material and create a weapon from whatever material he bites. Then he wears a necklace with the metal tags in order to provide a quick and easy access to materials. One of the weaker abilities, in my opinion. But
if we want to make a stretch for Elisabetta Ix, just because I know this song by Ghost of Elizabeth. It talks about Elizabeth Bathory, who was a Hungarian noblewoman, from whom the name Bathory has been labeled by the Guinness World Records as the most prolific female murderer. Though the number of her victims,
what's her name?
Is debated. Elizabeth Bathory.
That's interesting. You talk about like the women that killed people. Elizabeth
and in the song
in the show,
just... by Ghost. Wait, sorry. In the song by the song by Ghost says that she has a pact with Satan, and with through her disposal.
Interesting.
Of mankind.
Oh, nice. That's. I'm glad you're here, because I wouldn't have.
Boom.
I wouldn't have called that in, because I guess is that like a play on the whole femme fatale?
I think so.
Okay.
She peasant virgins killed. I'm just reading the lyrics at this point. Great song, by the way, from Ghost's first album.
Yeah, because Ix is just it's a suffix to make something feminine, right? It is also a name, but like to put something into Ix, that's interesting. Yeah,
that could be
so. I mean, she is like a femme fatale kind of character. Because she uses her ability to bring about the downfall of a lot of characters in the show later on. Nice. Very cool. There we go.
Bam.
Who else is left? Kaim. I skipped over Kaim when you were away, because I know that.
Thank you.
I know that we both like the character. So in the show, Kaim is the owl and he's the Mineta of the group, which isn't fair to say. That's a bad comparison, because Kaim is actually a really, really good character. And Mineta is garbage. Well, I mean, Kaim is just, he's just a funny character. He's the token pervert. That's what you mean by great. Of the group, but like, we don't really spend any time on his perversion.
He doesn't waste our time.
He doesn't waste our time. That's actually a really, really great way of describing it.
Because it's a lot of the time it's very background, like you notice it, but it's not the focus of the scene.
Yeah, like a lot of times he'll be there as part of the scenery, where time is being spent on the scenery already. So we'll just throw him into the scenery. Whereas with Mineta, like they actually spend time in the show about him, like with his ear to the dressing, to like the change room or something like that. Right?
Yeah.
So.
Instead with Kaim, people will be talking and you'll see him in the background with his eyes perfectly like lined with up with Elizabeth's eyes. Like skirt.
Yeah, one of my favorite scenes with him is actually it's quite a bit later on in the series where like Ilima starts getting close to like all the girls, and at some point they start to put trials on all the guys that have gotten close to the girls in the class. And so like Sabnok got close to some of the girls. And so like Kaim's like, you know, like mad at him. And then Ilima gets close to all of the girls in the class. And then you see like, you see Kaim holding a sign with the words death penalty on it. So yeah, so with Kaim, his power is called the translation, which allows him to communicate with other creatures, and then even command them. I don't think we've seen this in the first season.
Definitely not.
Yeah, so we'll see it later. In demonology, Kaim is depicted in some books as a bird. There we go. And was known as a communicator. He was able to give others the ability to understand the language of nature. So he's able to translate a beast speak, but he's also able to interpret the sound of rushing water. So just a connection to nature.
I don't see anything here about the demon being about lust or anything like that, which I'm mildly disappointed.
Yeah, I wonder why they made the owl.
Why did they choose him as the token pervert, you know? But that's fine.
So there is... There's another...
Apparently, the name Kaim, though, is a Gaelic rendering of the biblical Cain.
Cain, the guy who killed his brother.
Yes. Once again, not really anything about perversion, but I guess, you know.
Well, like, maybe, because there is talk about, like, how Cain, Cain was, like, a bringer of chaos, because literally he destroyed everything that was good. Because Abel was the personification of all that was good, which is why like God favored Abel so much. So I don't know if you can make that connection. I need some time to pull something out of my ass with that. hard to say. There is one more person that I want to talk about. He was in the show, so it's fair game. But I don't know if I want to. I don't know if I want to spoil it.
Ooh. He was so in season one.
Do you remember seeing a dude? But he was just there.
Just tell me.
Go to the last episode. So he was actually in the first episode. He was in a lot of the episodes. Open up Crunchyroll. go to the final episode and go to can go to 505. If you don't want to be spoiled, you can stop you can stop the podcast episode right now, because I remember wondering like what the fuck was going on with this guy until a lot later. But yeah, go to Crunchyroll, go to the final episode of Ethan McCune, and then go to 505.
Okay. So it's not Triangle Chick. Wait. It's playing because I can't. Wait. 501. Oh, that dude. Yes. I remember seeing him literally on this last episode and thinking, who the fuck is that? Who the fuck are you?
So he was even there.
But I didn't pay it any mind.
So this guy, if for the series, you know exactly who it is that I'm talking about. If you've been aware throughout the series, this is Person Soy. Person Soy, he showed up. You see him in the first episode. You see him when the Misfit episode was the Misfit class was created. You see him during the first test where they have to go through the training or the proving ground where they have to like race from one end to the next. He was in the dodgeball episode. He was in a bunch of other episodes, and yeah, he was just there. So it's just kind of like, so he's like Waldo, where he pops up and like, you don't like, so when I was watching the series again with our watch party, I was actually looking out for when Person Soy would show up, and no one said anything. I was waiting for someone to say, wait a minute, like who the hell, like who the fuck is this guy?
I remember now that I'm seeing him, I remember having that thought because they spent some time just zooming in on him and then nothing.
Yep. Like
the scene just starts with him staring out the window and then it just cuts to everyone else.
Yeah.
But it just leaves you with like, who the fuck are you?
So he's
that's funny.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna talk about his power because his powers are related to the show and I'd rather not spoil it, but in demonology,
is it related to the demon? Okay, never mind, you're talking
about the demon. Yeah, it's related in some way, but in demonology, person was a high ranking, like a really really high ranking. He was one of the kings
great
of hell
king.
He was a king of hell, and he knew of all things hidden, whether treasure or thought. The sound of trumpets were also said to be played in his presence. I guess I can just talk about his power. Person Soy, his power is... Do you want to know what his power is?
I'm not going to talk about it. I guess I can just talk about his power.
Sorry, I just wanted to... Oh.
You can talk about his power. I don't give a shit, dude.
Do you want me? Okay. His power is anti-recognition. So
anti-recognition?
It reduces his ability to stand out.
That's hilarious.
Which is great because it works on us. Like mortal humans. He's also a really good trumpet player, which is kind of connects really well to the fact that trumpets are played when the original person was around. So yeah, we don't, I don't think we'll see Person Soy in season two, or actually like we'll see him
in the first episode and the last,
but we won't know anything about him. Yeah. He might be,
okay.
Yeah, he might be like a season three kind of dude.
And then he'll... does he show up with like a I've been here all along kind of like... kind of joke? Because that'd be great. I would actually ask you, like, have you looked at the manga, like, earlier chapters? Does he show up?
He's there.
He's there? Okay. Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, he doesn't talk, but like he's in the background.
Sorry, we're talking about demons.
And so, I mean, like with the manga, it's easier to like see something because you have a static, you have a static frame shot, right? As opposed to a manga where everything, or an anime where everything just kind of moves at a pace. So,
I wanted to say sorry. I we're talking about demons here, and I should respect that. I said Jesus Christ. I shouldn't have. My apologies. You know, I want to be respectful to all the demons that we're speaking about here.
You can talk about Jesus. It's around Easter.
It is right after Easter. You're right. He has risen. Did you celebrate Easter, by the way?
Kind of.
Did you have a good Easter? Kind of.
It's been a very quiet past two Easters.
Well, rightfully so. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's all I got on Ilima. Not until season two comes out, in which case I can start. I can start talking more and more about it.
Yeah, I'm excited, man, and I'm glad. Oh, you know what's one thing that I wanted to briefly mention about season two? I got worried for a second because I've been keeping watch of what shows are going to be carried by Crunchyroll. Mm-hmm. And Iruma was not showing up on the list for the longest time. And I was sitting here like, oh no. Please don't let it be Funimation.
Oh, that'd be the worst.
But it is on the list now, which is great.
Although, I mean, like, for example, like with a show like Jobless Reincarnation, which was on Funimation, it was worth it. Like a show will...
I feel like that like, one was
a show
fine,
is good yeah, enough that...
Did you finish it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good, yeah.
I'm reading the manga because so I can't good. Wait.
I actually feel like that's going to be a manga that I'll start reading.
Like the same thing with Promised Neverland, because everyone just got so mad at the recent season because they weren't true to the manga.
With the recent season?
Yeah.
I didn't watch season two, so... I was planning to, but if you're saying that it's not true to the manga, then I might not watch it if they pulled a Tokyo Ghoul.
Yeah, or FMA version one.
FMA attempt number one.
Yep. Everything's all cool until the Nazis show up.
I should look up when that happens, because just to watch that ending... Because I've only seen Brotherhood, hey? I've never seen the original FMA.
Oh,
yeah,
man,
I've only seen Brotherhood.
It's so, just so weird, dude. It was a great series, don't get me wrong. But
I can just imagine that Nazi showing up and everything just feeling so surreal because it's an anime about like a completely different world.
Yeah. And like especially when you get into the movie The Conqueror of Shambhala. Where Hitler wants to conquer the other world.
What the fuck?
Yeah, because they're like mirror, there are two separate worlds that mirror each other. So
you're telling me that they made a movie where they doubled down on the Nazi?
Yeah, the movie was like the sequel to the original animated series. So pretty much what happened was that for some reason, Hitler got word of the fact that there is this other world. And they called this world Shambhala. So pretty much like Edwards, like Amestris, the Germans called it Shambhala. And actually, they in the movie they depict, I think it was the beer hall push, where Hitler and like other members of like the early Nazis tried to take over. But yeah,
weird.
They tried to. I'm sorry if I'm spoiling the movie, but the movie is.
So anyway, the
Germans are able to teleport. They go through some sort of portal where they end up in Amestris, and then like the people from Amestris are holy shit. Like you know, there are these new invaders with like tanks and whatnot, and. Yeah, they push him back with alchemy and whatnot, and oh, I'm thinking about it now. That was weird.
That's fucked. I might watch it just because of how fucked that sounds. Sorry, that has nothing to do with Iruma, but I mean, I could just sit here and talk about all of this. I do think we should probably wrap it up.
Yeah,
soon,
we'll wrap it up. But yeah, there we go. Iruma-kun discussion. Bit of a look at the demonology, origins of the names. I know I keep on saying etymology, but etymology is actually like the history of the formation of the word itself.
Of the word.
Yeah. Yeah, not about so. Like where the actual name came from. So I need to be, correct. I need to be mindful of my use of the word. These are the origins of where the names came from. And yeah, that's about it. I'm looking forward to next week. I've got a couple tests and exams, but once that's out of the way, I can actually look forward to starting the next season. And maybe we can actually have like a spring preview, because I know we skipped over the winter preview, but
dude, there's quite a few. I mean, the winter preview, we briefly touched on shows, but like that last season was a lot of sequels.
Yeah, that's very true.
But with this one, I feel like there's a lot of new shows that could be worth it. You know, I've started watching some of them, and I'm intrigued, and I do want to talk about some of these.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking about Nagatoro, because I'm reading the manga, and the series is so weird. It is.
I'm looking forward to that one, because I've heard a lot of controversy of it. It's
so weird, and like I don't know how to feel about it.
How do you feel about the art style, by the way?
I mean,
I don't know. This is stuff that we could talk
about. Yeah, we'll give a lot about afterwards. So yeah, look forward to our spring preview, because there is a lot of weird shit to talk about.
There's a lot of weird shit coming out, yeah. Man. Yeah. But I'm intrigued, nonetheless. But yeah, I think we should probably end it. We're like at what? Like
an hour and 40 something.
So yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, thankfully we did our social media plug at the very beginning, so we don't have to do it again. So all we have to do is say goodbye, stay healthy.
Well, I briefly wanted to say, if you want to keep talking about shit like this, shoot me a message on Twitter.
Or you can do that. Or yeah, if you want to bring stuff up, you can message us on social media. We're doing a plug again. Oh man, wanted to end it, and then you continue to like you stretch this out for another 20 seconds.
God, you know what? I just wanted to tell our viewers.
I was already in the middle of saying goodbye, and then
you know what?
You know, you're like, this is like when you're stuck at the entrance to the door when you're trying to like leave a house. And then, like, you're continuing the conversation as you're like,
putting our shoes on. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, and then, like, you're just like there in the entrance for like another 15 minutes.
And you
minutes.
Like grab the doorknob, yeah. But you keep like, talking as you have the hold of the doorknob. And then you open the door, but then you talk for another 5 minutes. And then there comes the point where you're like, it's cold outside. You better go.
Yeah. Okay. It's just like, I love you, but like, I want to go to sleep. So please get the fuck out of my house. Yeah. So that's at the point we're at. So thank you so much. We're going to say goodbye. Stay healthy. Stay cool. We'll see you next time.
Bye.